Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
This is like the craziest sort of unmarketable, completely unmarketable kind of major label album you could think of.
It's Jim Lenihan here on Rockin' the Suburbs. So glad you have tuned in for Punk Weeks. That is weeks plural, 2 weeks. We're almost to the end. We're at the penultimate episode here in the series where Paul Hayden and Vasanth Ramamurthy are going to talk about 90s punk. All right, guys, go for it.
What's the next area you want to talk about?
Yeah, we're moving on to the 90s, and we're just going to do general, by this time, scenes are not, things are much, much larger. There's many more bands. And there's more, I guess, touring, so the scenes are not as insular, right? In the 90s, so we're kind of expanding things just to cover, 90s as a whole. Across America, instead of covering individual scenes like we did in the 80s, because there's just much more to cover now in the 90s. So,
Right.
yeah. So why don't you go ahead?
All right. My first pick here is Sleater-Kinney, Call the Doctor. It is their second album, and in my opinion, a quantum leap from their debut, their self-titled debut. If it's considered a Riot Grrrl classic, but to me, it's just simply a great punk album. It's their two guitar attack sounds natural in sync. The drummer at this point of their career was Laura McFarlane, and she holds her own. I mean, and you don't miss the bass guitar. I mean, the two guitars create almost kind of a rhythm of its own. Tons of great riffs, strong melodies, and it ranked third in the 1996, is that right? Paz and Jop Poll with the Village Voice. So, a lot of people think Dig Me Out was kind of their breakthrough or whatever you want to call it. But in my opinion, it's this one, not to take anything away from Dig Me Out, but this is their punk album, I think. This is their kind of their best,
Yeah,
if you want to call it.
I'm glad you picked this one because I agree with you. I prefer this one to the hot, sorry, to Dig Me Out, which came out afterwards. I think overall I like the Hot Rock, which came out in 99, I think. So that's my favorite album of theirs, but like definitely of the first three, I guess their punkier era. Call the Doctor is a great pick. Yeah, the guitars are great. This is the one that has Wanna Be Your Joey Ramone. Yeah, the closer, I think Heart Attack is an amazing song. So yeah, I love this album.
Yeah, good stuff. And now they're still going today. I mean, sounded a little bit different, but I'm glad to see they're still in the game making, making good music.
Yeah, I haven't seen them in a long, long time, but I did buy tickets. They are touring in fall, I believe, with Liz Phair. So I bought tickets for
Oh.
that show. So I'm excited. I haven't seen them, honestly, like since whatever, early 2000 thing when Jana was still in the band. And I've been kind of meh on their some of their albums of late without Janet in the band. But like, you know, the combination of seeing them with Liz Phair is kind of couldn't miss that. So
Yeah, that's a
plan
great
to go
double
see
bill.
that. Yeah.
What do you want? What do I want to talk about next, Vasant?
Okay, I'm going to talk about a band called Moss Icon, and the album is called Liburnum, Wits and Fly. This is probably one that I would wager most people have not heard of. This was recorded in 1988 and was released in 1993. They were a band from Annapolis, Maryland, from 86 to 91. Not too many bands, punk bands even, were in that scene in Annapolis, Maryland. Another one that people may have heard of is called The Hated, who have become more popular in recent years because of some reissues on Numera Group and stuff, but they were kind of around the same time. But similar to Rites of Spring, this is also considered a sort of a key foundation album of like emo music because of the lyrically, it's sort of like a stream of consciousness and kind of spieling lyrics that way, as well as some of the screaming that's happening in some of the songs. This album is not, it's not a religious album per se, but there are a lot of references to God in it, so it's not a Christian album by any means, but
God is the light. He's a vampire, feeding off of itself. And I guess that's why it triggers on now. It's a cycle. Snake eating tail. It's a cycle of snake eating tail. I thought it meant to fight it! I know it does! I thought it meant to fight it! I know it does! It was only my misunderstanding of the words of me! I thought it meant to fight it! I know it does! I got it in it! What's that good?
Yeah, it kind of flows with that sort of stream of conscious lyrics. There's lyrics about like I don't even know, but there's like Latin themes about Latin America and like the US occupation there, and there's like Native American themes. It's very like sort of left-wing political, but in a very abstract kind of way. But the key track for me here is the title track, which is 11 minutes long, and it just kind of slow builds up until the climax, which is like the last few minutes of it, builds to like this explosion. So yeah, I got into this one just because I think sometime in the early 2000s I was just exploring and learning about the early hardcore and emo and stuff, and this album was obviously listed as one of the key albums in that scene. So yeah, I've got into that through that and been a fan of it since then. So I believe this was a new one for you. So did you get a chance to listen, and what did you think?
It is new. I had not heard of them at all. And when I played it, the notes I made were like, okay, very intense vocals. And then the band it reminded me of at times was Suicidal Tendencies, which I don't know if that's just my weird brain or what, but it had that kind of, the Suicidal Tendencies were, you could say they were kind of emo. I mean,
Institutionalized, yeah.
institutionalized. I mean, he's got some things to say. But I found it to be a very intense and like almost too intense. Like I needed to perhaps take it in stages. I mean, 11-minute song, it's great, but I found it a little tiring. I'm just not used to that kind of intensity. Certainly when you're not expecting it, but I like going in blind, and I think what they're doing is great, and I will go back to that one as well and go in with a more prepared listening experience ahead of me instead of going in blind and in this freight train almost like, whoa, this is something else.
Okay,
But
well, that's cool. I would not. I only know the first Suicidal Tendencies record, but I can't quite make the connection. But it's an interesting comparison you're making there.
Freedom lover, we have freedom. Rest well under mother's warm wing.
For something completely different.
Oh, yes.
This is one of my pet bands. I don't know if many people have heard of them. It's not like I would go out and say you must hear this, but I really like the band Chicks Dig It from Calgary. And then Chixdigit, and an exclamation point after that. They're a pop punk band and were actually a concept before they were an actual band. In 1990, when they were in high school, the guys thought, we really want to have a band, and they had the concept already, and so they had T-shirts designed with the logos and everything, and they sold them to their fellow students and made enough money to buy a drum kit because they had no instruments at all at the time. Like, all they were just thinking was, we should be in a band, and eventually, over the next 5 years, they practiced and made a name for themselves locally. And then by 1996, they signed a Sub Pop of all labels and released their self-titled debut. It's one of those albums, it just makes me smile every time I hear it. I mean, the humor is juvenile at best, I'll admit. I mean, some of the song titles are Henry Rollins Is No Fun, The Toilet Seat's Coming Down, and I feel like Jerry Cheevers, Stitch Marks on My Heart. Cheevers was a goalie back in, I think, the 70s on the Bruins. And of course, being from Canada, hockey's the big deal up there. So they just like to have fun, and the music's very Ramonesy, and the songs are short. The album's not terribly long. Sometimes punk can get heavy, but when you want a nice alternative, I think this would be a good one to put on and just kick back, relax, and not have to think too hard. Just have fun.
Yeah, this was a new one for me. So for some reason I had in my head, I thought this was a female band. I was surprised to learn that they're all male. I think because I had them in my head similar to the New York band Lunachix, which is a all-female band. And so I, conflated Lunachix and Chicks Digget. But yeah, anyway, yeah, this was a new listen to me. It was a good one. Definitely, yeah, fun listen. I think they fit right in line with like the 90s sort of punky pop. Even on Sub Pop you had bands like the Fastbacks. So that very much in line with that, and like the 90s was chock full of like Screeching Weasel and like the Queers and Pansy Division, all those sort of Bay Area sort of punk pop bands. I think this is very much in line with that. But yeah, it was a cool. I would imagine if you listen to this after a Moss Icon or something, it'd be a good palate cleanser, probably.
Right, exactly. What album do you want to talk about next?
Okay, I am going to talk about a Chicago band called Tar. The album's called A Roundhouse. This was released in 1990. Tar was a Chicago band. They were born out of a earlier band called Blatant Descent. Whereas Blatant Descent was more of a Chicago, yeah, I guess more of a sort of Midwest Chicago punk band. Tar kind of more went into a little bit slower, noisier in the Amphetamine Reptile Minnesota kind of style, but Tar was more melodic than I would say more of the Amphetamine Reptile bands. Like the lead singer John Moore could actually sing fairly decently, and this is a tough one for me to describe, but it's like. The best way I can say is they sort of have that classic, very dry 90s Chicago sound, where it's like a mix of like indie rock punk. It's not hardcore at all, but it's like sort of the slower version, more intricate version of punk, but combining noise rock elements and that kind of thing. This was engineered by Brad Wood, who did the Lucifer albums and did a bunch of Chicago bands like Seam, and was a part of that whole Chicago touch and go indie scene and all that, as well as Ian Burgess. Ian Burgess was a British recording engineer, but he was based in Chicago, and he recorded a lot of the '80s Chicago bands like Big Black and, who else? Naked Ray Gun, I think he worked with as well, we talked about. And so he was a part of that whole Chicago punk scene. So this is definitely, Tar is a child of that sort of scene, but kind of putting a more, I guess, slowed down 90s spin on that. So Tar Roundhouse is a pick. Now, did you get a chance to listen to this one?
I did, and again, if I had heard of them, I forgot, but I absolutely love this. This is the
Cool.
one where I'm like, living in Chicago in 1990, I'm embarrassed to say that I missed it, but my excuse would be that maybe I was thinking of Tad instead of Tar.
Right.
So, but I loved it. Maybe the one comment I made that maybe I read a review and it is abrasive, but not in an off-putting way, not to me anyway.
Yeah.
That might have been the one element that, if I had read a review and I saw that word, I would think, man, I wasn't ready for that yet. Even though I listened to plenty of abrasive stuff, I don't know if I really wanted that, any more of that. But that's my loss. But I will rectify this. I'm definitely going to get this because I absolutely loved it.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, Tar is also a more recent discovery for me as well. I think when I talked about Die Kreuzin earlier, I sort of dug into the Touch and Go catalog later, and so yeah, like Tar and Die Kreuzin, sort of more of the lesser known, Touch and Go bands. Tar, the last two albums were on Touch and Go. The first couple were on Amphetamine Reptile. But yeah, that's cool that. You liked it as well as well.
Anything else you want to talk about from here, from this time?
Yeah. Last album I want to talk about is a band from San Diego called Drive Like Jehu. They only had two albums, and this is their second album, Yank Crime. I did an episode a long, long time ago on Rock in the Suburbs where I talked about strange indie albums that were released on major labels, and this was one of them. So this was released in 1994 on Interscope Records. Now, how did it end up on Interscope Records? Well, 1994, this is obviously the post Nirvana boom where they were signing anybody and everybody. And the guitarist in Drive Like Jehu is a guy named John Reese, who is also the head of the more popular band Rocket from the Crypt. And Interscope wanted to sign Rocket from the Crypt. And John Reese basically said, okay, if you want us, you have to sign my other band, Drive Like Jehu, as well. And you know, these guys obviously had a lot of money to throw around, so they're like, sure, we'll put out your album. So this is like the craziest sort of unmarketable, completely unmarketable kind of major label album you could think of. But yeah, so it's like a San Diego band. They came up in like the late 80s, early 90s punk scene in San Diego. Two guitars. John Reese was very influenced by Honor Roll, which we mentioned just a little while back. So that's sort of naughty songs, Knotty. I'm saying not Nauggity, but very sort of mathy stop start rhythms, longer songs. That's what this album is about. There's a song on here called Luau, which is like 8 9 minutes long. That's not all the songs are like that. Like the first one's kind of a short one. Drive Like Jehu was very influential on a lot of sort of math metal bands and punk bands later. The Deftones did a cover of Drive Like Jehu on one of their cover albums. So yeah, pretty influential band, much bigger now than they were at the time, but still surprising that this came out in a major label considering what it sounds like. So yeah, Drive Like Jehu, Yank Crime is the pick.
All right. Yeah, that one I had some passing familiarity with it. But when I went back to it, I'm like, again, I noticed intense vocals, not holding back whatsoever. Just an attack, which I enjoyed. And the band that came to mind, again, I may be way off track, was Modest Mouse. And like the early, like the Lonesome Crowded West that has those kind of longer songs that kind of meander a bit, but eventually they resolve.
I see what you mean. I would agree with like the earlier Modest Mouse. Sort of have, they're not as Modest Mouse was nowhere near as noisy, but they had that similar sort of knotty, gnarled kind of song structure. And yeah, for sure.
So I enjoyed it. I want to spend more time with it because, again, I think that was one of these was a fairly long album in total. This
I
might be
think this
over an
one
hour.
is, yeah.
So it's not one of those you can just sit down once and say, "Okay, I think I know what I got." There's more there, and I want to spend, the proper amount of time with it. But I did like what they were doing, and I did not realize the connection with Rocket from the Crypt to don't sound anything like this. So that was a I did not realize that, and dig it the fact the guy can do two different bands, but two really good bands. So tip of the cap to John Reese.
Mine, mine, mine.
Let's see. What else do you want to talk about from the 90s?
Yeah, just briefly in passing, some other ones that we like. Bikini Kill, the singles compilation. It's a nice sort of 8 or 9 set of their 7 singles, which are pretty essential. And Rebel Girl is one of them. So that's a good one. Another one is a band called Born Against, 9 patriotic hymns for children. Born Against was a New York band, sort of. In the early 90s, they came after that New York hardcore scene. So they were had some of the noisiness and aggression of that scene, but they were much sort of smarter and funnier than those other bands, had more of a sense of humor about things, a little bit, definitely more, a little bit more political, more in that sense. So yeah, Born Against, cool band. Another one is Jawbox Novelty. Now in that Rock the Suburbs episode I just mentioned, I talked about Jawbox's album After This, which was For Your Own Special Sweetheart, which was released on Atlantic Records. But this Novelty was their predecessor, which came out on Discord, which is actually my favorite there. So this is an excellent album, Novelty. And then the other one I wanted to mention was the Jesus Lizard. We already talked about Scratch Acid, but Jesus Lizard Goat, Touch and Go classic out of Chicago. And then the last one from the 90s is a band called Slant Six, Soda Pop ripoff. And this is another Discord release. Slant Six, again, I think is one of the more underrated Discord bands. They were. I think if you like the Sleater-Kinney album that we talked about, or Eddie Sleater-Kinney, this one is essential listening, because it's a 3-piece, all female, and kind of similar in that vein, in the sense of like that sort of garage punk sound, I guess, Slant Six has. So yeah, Soda Pop ripoff. Any thoughts on these albums you have, Paul?
Bikini Kill, obviously, definitely a must-own. Their singles were really terrific, and don't be scared off by the Riot Girl thing. It's just great music. Rebel Girl by now, it's, geez, I'm seeing it in movies
Oh
and
yeah. It's
everything. It's got a life of its own.
a bit too ubiquitous, if you ask me.
Yeah, right. And the Jesus Lizard, Goat, that's great stuff. I think they did a great job of continuing kind of the spirit of Scratch Acid, but expanding it and picking up a much bigger audience than they did. And so I was glad to see them being, whatever you want to call success at the indie level, but certainly a name that people would know, and they had some good, I think they had some good marketing or publicity behind them. So I was happy to see them continue. The other ones, honestly, I get Jawbox and Jawbreaker mixed up. So I gotta say, I don't know if I've heard that one. Born
Okay.
Against and Slant Six, I was not familiar with at all. But
Okay. You'll definitely like Slant 6, by the way.
I've definitely got some homework after going through all these things I wasn't familiar with. So I'm excited about that.
All right, and that was part 9 of Punk Weeks on Rock in the Suburbs. Tune in tomorrow for the conclusion of the series when the guys will talk about 21st century punk. It's Rock in the Suburbs, and they'll talk to you tomorrow.